because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, on this Monday as we start the new year. And the new year, of course, starts at Santa Anita on the day after Christmas, one of the great days in racing every year. And, of course, you know, the turf was delayed. They had to wait a little bit, but the main track, there was nothing to prevent the kind of show that was put on. And when it came to the Malibu, the last grade one, seemingly, you know, at least on the main track of every year, the flight line performance, as we started the morning with John Sadler, it just was such a wow moment that it, you know, it continues to have people intrigued at what. You know, what the future holds. And John is going to continue to be careful, as he told us. But the story is going to be more complete when we talk to John, to David and Gordo, who joins us now. And David, Happy New Year, first of all.
Thanks, Steve. Happy New Year to you, too.
David, when you get a horse like this, and you've certainly have been associated with a lot of great horses and all-time greats when we think of the big mare. But this horse, as I said to John, when you have a horse this fast, it's got to be a hold-your-breath kind of a situation. I mean, literally on a daily basis, having a horse this talented and this fast.
Yes. I mean, the short answer is yes, but you know, at the same time, John knows the horse inside and out. We've had the horse in the program, you know, from the purchase time until he's gone to John, and now with John's training. You know, we have familiarity with him through the Summer Win Association that Lane's Inn has. So we're lucky. We know the horse, not necessarily since birth, but for most of his life. And you know, John just listens to what the horse is telling him. The partnership has allowed us to do what's right by the horse during the breaking process, you know, during some of the other things I'm sure we'll talk about during this call. And the horse is rewarding us, and it's a great advertisement for when they talk about patience in racing. This, I'm going to write a book on it and thank all my clients and the trainers and the farms I deal with, because you know, whether it's Flightline or it's Accelerate or Zenyatta, you know, Express Train is another one that won, is a good example. Flagstaff, you know, we've had a lot of really good horses, and I'm forgetting some, that if we didn't give them the patience and the time and, you know, stick to our guns, not listen to what, you know, the armchair analysis comes from social media today, these horses wouldn't have been who they are.
You know, it's funny. I didn't think of a theme necessarily today, but we also are paying tribute to Billy Turner. And when you mention those horses that John has handled, both Johns, because John Sheriffs, of course, you mentioned Express Train and Zenyatta. But here's Flagstaff, Accelerate, now Flightline, John Sheriffs, John Sadler, and Billy Turner. They all share first of all, they're all tall. Occurs to me that they're all probably 6'2" plus, but they all were equestrians before they got to the racetrack.
Well, what I think is something that I'm proud of with all the people I deal with is that they're horsemen and women, you know, all up and down my supply chain that I'm involved with. Everybody understands horses. They have been around them. I mean, think about Mr. Farish. He was a pretty top-level polo player, is my understanding, in his day. And I think to know how to develop these horses and how to know when to stop, when to go, when to push, when to not push, you know, there's no top horseman or woman in this country at any discipline that doesn't have to push a horse, you know, to the right level to get them fit to compete. And there's a fine line of knowing how far to go and not go. And clearly some trainers push them too far and some just right. You know, it's like, what's the Goldilocks? You know, it's too cold, too hot, just right. That's the same with training. And I think it's awesome that, you know, I'm lucky the people I work with know. I mean, John Sheriffs, he's taught the guy that rode Giacomo, he taught that kid how to ride. I don't know how many trainers today could take a person that's never ridden a horse and teach him how to ride properly and gallop and then have that guy riding Kentucky Derby winner and, you know, a bunch of other good horses he had. I mean, the horsemanship side that all the people you mentioned, I didn't know Mr. Turner, but clearly that's an interesting piece of information. And I think it's a theme. I think you're right. And I think if you look down who's successful in this business long term, they understand the horses and horsemanship.
And this is certainly a topic that I think we'll include in today just by virtue of the group that came together that owns Flightline. There's different priorities and different sets of owners have different goals. And, you know, we specifically seem to be in an era when it comes to the marketplace, David, and you can speak to this as you know, somebody that identifies purchase prospects and development candidates. You know, there's people that are involved essentially looking to find stallion candidates and make stallions as the goal. When you talk about Accelerate's career and now this horse, you know, there wasn't going to be a classic campaign for whatever, you know, individual reasons. But as I said to John earlier, you know, it's your job to try to maximize the horse's career potential. And if that means missing, you know, the first half of the season or easing into the first half with an April start and then a summer start and then saying, we're going to bypass Breeders' Cup and we'll target the Malibu. I mean, it just seems like this has been a very, I would imagine, satisfying course of action with this horse, you know, playing the cards as they were dealt.
Right, and that's exactly correct. And, you know, no trainer that I'm involved with stands in a horse's way from them getting to the track. You know, and so, but what they all do successfully, and you've mentioned horses, we've both talked about them already in this call, if the trainers didn't do with the horses what the horses were telling them to do, if John didn't, you know, the horse came in from Mayberry Farm in Flightline's case, and he's such a natural talent. I had to remind John, hey, you know, we don't forget we're a little behind because of X, Y, and Z with this horse. He goes, oh, my God, he's doing it so easy. Thanks for reminding me. They back off. They make all the right moves, you know, because something that I hope the public understands and owners understand, full disclaimer, I'm an advocate for trainers and the training of horses. You know, do you think John Sadler doesn't want to run this horse, or the you know, the ownership groups don't want to run? Of course they do. But if you do what's right by the horse, sometimes we have to temper our own enthusiasm and let the horse get where it wants to go, you know, versus run it every 2 weeks just because. You know, I mean, that's a – so by allowing the trainers to do what they need to do, and they're listening to the horses – if this horse could have run early, or Accelerate, or Zenyatta, or this one or that one was going to run at two and have had Triple Crown campaigns, you know, we didn't stand in their way to do that. The trainers didn't go, ah, David, make sure you tell the owners we're going to run this horse late in his three-year-old year because I don't want to win the Derby. You know, it doesn't, that's not how it is. And, you know, a guy like the Johns, listen, again, full disclosure, I'm the head of their fan clubs. Like John Sheriff, you know, he's won a Derby. He doesn't stand in the horse's way to not make it. And he's took plenty of horses to the Derby, actually, that have run competitively. I mean, I'm looking at a picture of Honor AP I keep in my office, who I think is one of the most talented horses we ever had. And just because of circumstances, got unlucky to not be a Derby winner, you know? You know, John Sadler took Rock Your World this year. It's not that these trainers, and it just goes for a lot of trainers cross country, they'll stand in the horse's way, but if we want to preach to do what's right by the horse to make them be successful, we have to allow the trainers to do that.
You hinted at what was a what had to be a scary scenario with this horse, and you know the picture of the hind end puncture and the wound that the way it healed. You know that I think everybody. You know that that followed the story last week. They saw it, and I mean, explain what happened and how much of a threat this was to, you know, having this horse even get to the racetrack.
So you know, I walking you through. You know, everybody knows the Mayberries are my go-to people in our team, and they've produced their own Hall of Fame of good horses, both on the racetrack during their training careers and now in what's the second career is breaking these horses to go to the races. And every year, you know, before this call, I was making my plans to go down there in January. I tend to go down and look through everything because they're on the track and we got a little better line on them than we do. So before Christmas, you know, I was getting the, you know, last year we had, you know, Honor AP. This year we got a couple more that look pretty darn good, like that level, okay. And they're talking about them. So I go down there and Flightline and Rock Your World. We had another horse called Parnelli. There are some others in there. And we go down the list. And I say, great, I'm looking forward to seeing them. So, you know, I come down, I'm watching horses train. And where our training stand is, the barns are all organized. So you can watch train. I'd walk back and forth looking at horses before they go out. And so the next set that has Flightline in it, and he was named from when we bought him. So Flightline's in this next set, and I hear a crash. You know, everybody hears it. So I walk around. He's in the premier stall in the place, you know, because the girls, they have their favorites. You know, they've got him by the office. And I go around a corner, and there, the horse was tacked up, getting ready to go out. And he's quiet as a lamb. He's a great nature, great temperament horse. But something we think was like a tarp that was covering some shavings a good bit away from the barn. A gust of wind blew up and just it scared him, and he went right back. And he caught his hind quarter on this latch, and it was a very deep puncture wound. And I described it. It looked like a blooming onion from Outback covered with what? And I turned around. I'm not laughing. I can laugh now, but at the time, I walked up and I saw it. I had some very colorful language that I muttered quite loudly, and I just turned around and walked the other way and said, "Call you, get the vet." You know, but so we, you know, because the horse had ability, because his price and everything else, you know, we sent him in the clinic. They put some drains in there, sewed it up, and puncture wounds are that are deep. Whether it's in a leg or in a big muscle group, whatever it is, it's going to heal from the inside out. And because that's muscle, it takes a long time to heal. So he, you know, we had to give him the time. There's no choice. And so we did. And, you know, there's obviously no, there was no prognosis for any long-term issues. And clearly there aren't any, but it's a time. Anybody that owns horses with me or sees my reports, I call it an inconvenience of time. And to let these things heal, we have to give it the time. And the group, everybody on the in this ownership line and everybody involved with the horse, there was no whinging or moaning or making it uncomfortable. Everybody said, hey, things happen. Let's get it fixed up and hope for the best. And we've hoped for the best, and we got way more, you know,
to say the least. And you know, the grade one in the books as a 3-year-old, the Malibu is one of those races, along with the Allen Jerkins, that you know, there's a limit of opportunities. So in terms of the way the plan came together, you know, to get him a stake opportunity, that part worked. The front story, even ahead of the development, to get him to the races, the story is interesting because it brings together a lot of familiar names. And West Point originally signed the ticket, and he was a $1 million Saratoga yearling. And the way in which the other partners in some cases came back in, like Jane Lyon, who bred him, and Lane's End, who consigned him, who, you know, you're intimately involved with. I mean, talk about how these super groups come together. And you know, I know that Stephanie Aronis happened to be in Saratoga, and she, you know, was at the sale and sort of came along for the ride, and you know, that's the Aronis portion of it. I mean, talk about how these I don't want to call them deals, but how these groups assemble, because it's pretty organic.
Ours are very organic. You know, so Flightline and Triple Tap were, you know, I think they were pasture mates. And Lane's End is the exclusive seller of all of the Summerwind yearlings. So, you know, I was brought out there around, you know, it would have been this time right after the horse turned a year old. And we started looking at him because, you know, Bill Farish had been, you know, talking to Miss Lyon about how to do something on him. And so we went to look at him, and Mike Klein was there, and we're looking. And, you know, I preferred Flightline when I was there, but we had stayed on top of both horses up until they went to the sale. And so Jane is very open to partnerships, it seemed. And, you know, she had a dollar amount she was interested in to buy the horse or to sell the horse. And, you know, Bill is looking to lock up horses for future stallion deals. And it all just came together, to use your word, organically. And that's it. It was not a lot of magic to that part of it. The horse was in the consignment. You know, Bill is very interested in buying horses that we know have knowledge about. It's a personal criteria of mine in buying horses. I like to know where they're raised and, you know, what's been done to them within reason, and, you know, how the philosophy of the farm is on turnout and different things like that. And when we sell them, we have a lot of this information. So it gives, you know, Bill, and now with Terry's involvement, and, you know, all my clients, whether it's Mr. Searing, anybody, they like to buy a Lane's End horse because we have some knowledge of it. And it's a big help a lot of times when you're buying horses. If I can buy one out of Lane's End that I have a lot of knowledge of, or consigner X that I'm just going to go on what I see. You know, the confidence to spend a big amount of money, you tend to lean where you have a little bit more information.
This, you know, this group, and it, one part of it that when you think about the Ronis family, I certainly get a kick out of their approach. And when you talk about being patient and you know, letting horses develop, it's because Costa's got a 25 claimer that he just plucked. And so he's not that worried. You know, he's got enough action to keep him busy until a horse like Flightline gets to the races. I mean, him and Gary Barber, I think more than anybody, love the game and love, it doesn't matter to them if it's a 25 claimer or if it's a grade one champion. They just want to see him. They want him to run. They want to bet on him. They want to come out to the track.
Well, and something about the Horonis family that you can't teach. It's experience they have in agriculture, so they understand.
Good point.
That's something to bring into it. They understand a crop. They understand. Okay, we have a crop of grapes we're harvesting. We have a crop of oranges, whatever their different things that they raise are. They understand the quality of land. They understand, you know, you can have good crops and bad crops. And so that's, and patience. I mean, I think Costas was telling me they have vines of grapes that, you know, the age on them was pretty, it was a phenomenal number. And I'd just be guessing if I told you, I don't remember what it was. But he was saying, you know, the vineyard they'll have will be X amount of, you know, I think it's a long period, like decades old. And when you have tended to something a long time in agriculture, it gives you a really good understanding, even if you're dealing with citrus fruit or almonds or grapes or whatever, or you're dealing with horses. You know, the terms might be different, but the concepts are the
same. Sure.
So, you know, that kind of experience is, and you know, just general intelligence and management style. You know, I'm blessed if any of them are listening. All the people I deal with are not micromanagers, and they allow the trainers to train these horses. They're kept in the loop, they're informed, but they're not trying to tell them, well, hey, you need to work this horse on Wednesday. But you know, they don't get down to it that. They hire good people and they let those people do their jobs. And that success bears out, you know, in the results column. You know,
the other part to stay, you know, within this group. Obviously, West Point's got a certain model, but Jane Lyon, I honestly, in terms of having an elite broodmare band and having consistent success, I don't know who rivals her right now. It seems like you on an annual basis you look up at these 2-year-olds and she's produced, you know, whether she's involved, you know, whether it's a summer wind, you know, racer or not, or you know, it kind of seems like it's kind of a race the fillies, you know, sell the colts concept that Watts Humphrey has you know, talked to us about and is, you know, is a longstanding, you know, breeding maxim. But it's remarkable to me how consistent at this point summer wind's output is.
Well, she's done something and she should be commended in an era where a lot of our big time race fillies get sold overseas. Or when we had, you know, the Maktoum family was in here buying, Coolmore was in here buying. A lot of these horses ended up, whether it was in Europe or Japan, now Australia. You know, Jane is in here acquiring the top broodmares with top pedigrees, with the race records to match from deep families. And, you know, you do that, it's going to pay off, along with great management. I mean, Bobby Spalding. You know, he's a guy that if we had a farm manager's hall of fame, is going to be in it. You know, they have a nice farm, good land. You know, we start off with a good raw product, her vision to acquire top brood mares with top families, with top race records, and then breed them to the best sires, and then raise them organically. You know, that's a big deal. They race horse to be horses out there. And all that translates into success at the racetrack. It gives people like myself that buy horses a great level of confidence in buying. If you like the horse today, it's going to either look like what you bought or improve. You know, again, I can go out to the farm. They raise them like horses. She's done a tremendous job. It's her vision. It's her passion. She loves the horses. It's not, you know, clearly there's financial motives here and drive, but she's passionate about the horses. And I feel like these are rewards you get when you do the right things. And she deserves every bit of it. And in our relationship buying from her, you know, I personally had a fantastic year with our purchases on the track. You know, we have, I think, 5 grade one winners we bought at auction. 2 are Jane Lyon summer wind bred horses.
There's on that topic, there's probably at least a note to be included here. The Dam is certainly a horse that everybody's going to be familiar with, Feathered, that was Aaron Wellman and Eclipse and a very nice stakes filly who was solid on the dirt, but then became a graded stake winner on turf. And, you know, by Indian Charlie out of a Dynaformer mare and then hooked up with Tappet. So there's stamina involved in Flightline, and John talked about, you know, the long-term plan and in terms of, you know, getting to Breeders' Cup in November. But this is an interesting mare that you would think would tick a box. I mean, that, you know, this is obviously a Tappet son, but this feels like Feathered could get, you know, any number of different sires to, you know, to produce who knows what. I mean, she was versatile herself.
Well, and I look at it this way. With the stamina this pedigree has, I have no doubt Flightline can get around 2 turns. But looking hopefully in the very distant future at his stallion career, you know, he's going to have a lot of opportunities. Breeders are going to have so many choices with this horse because, you know, you're an Indian Charlie mare, you're Dynaformer in the Second Dam. You know, we're not overwrought with a lot of Mr. Prospector up close or, you know, another, there's not already another piece of AP Indian there, Stormcat. We're going to have a lot of ways to breed this horse, and he's going to tick a lot, I hate this phrase, tick a lot of the boxes, but he's going to really have a palate. His pedigree is going to have a palate that's going to be open to a lot of the broodmares worldwide. And that makes him exciting from the stallion standpoint and from the racing standpoint. I'm, you know, everybody, all the naysayers, well, he's got to go 2 turns and how far can he go? You know, he's not bred to 7/8 isn't supposed to be his limit. You know, I'm pretty sure we'll be able to get the 2 turns and the quote unquote classic distance of a Breeders' Cup Classic.
Just looking, actually, because now I got curious to see what you know, what her production slate has been. There's an older sister, good on paper, who's now a 5-year old.
She's standing out the window of my office.
does Craig Burnick still own her?
No, Craig does not. He was paid well for, but I think it was one of those deals good for everybody. So she's on the farm.
Was she covered last year at the late in the spring?
Yeah, I believe Craig owns Sir Prance-a-Lot, who I did have to do a little explaining to the team when we bought the mare who he was. But I'm familiar with the sire because He's pretty decent, you know. He's got a shot out there in California, and you know, we haven't booked her back, but she'll go to, you know, somebody, Quality Road or somebody like that is our suspicion. We're doing all that tomorrow. I'm a little superstitious. I didn't want to do any matings for it till after the Malibu.
I hear you. It happens to be a Warfront mare, and she was a winner, and actually she placed another four times, so she's got a decent enough page to get going. And then came Flightline. There is a now 3-year-old that's unraced, Varon, Pioneer of the Nile Colt.
Yeah, we sold him, and he... You know, he was okay. He just wasn't the type we would buy, and I believe he went overseas.
All right. And then there's now, for those that are going to look ahead, there's going to be a 2-year-old, Olivier, a full brother to Flightline.
Very nice horse. We took him to Saratoga. Didn't have the admirers that he deserved to have, but he's been put into another partnership, I believe. We're not participating in that, but it's a horse that I won't be surprised if he's carrying the flag additionally for this pedigree.
And then there's a yearling, a new yearling, Eagle's Flight. That's a Curlin colt. So she dropped a filly, and now 4 straight colts.
Yep. And if you're a breeding for the commercial market, you probably like to see those colts. I'm happy we have part of the female family with the fillies, with good on paper.
Very nice. So you bought back into the family again, another sort of, you know, bloodstock maxim. David Ngordo is with us. David, before we talk some business trends, the $1 million price tag, it so far, particularly at Santa Anita, and frankly, you know, coming out of the Baffert Barn, especially there, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, 500, 600, 900, the million ones. Talk about the philosophy of spending and spending, you know, close to seven figures, and justifying the expense. And this, I guess, can lead into what I wanted you to address in terms of this era's, you know, super group concept. Obviously, the SF Bloodstock group, and you think about, speaking of Vinnie Viola, who I think bred, if I'm not mistaken, bred feathered Viola and Rapoli. I mean, we're seeing, you know, Terry and West Point is involved in a lot of, you know, come together groups. Talk about this era and, you know, spending this kind of money and you know, how you justify it, essentially.
Well, so that's a good question. I'm glad you asked it, because I read a lot on Twitter. I try not to comment too much because it'd probably get me in trouble. But I do a lot of reading, and it's interesting that, you know, if you looked at Wall Street, and I have different clients of mine that are very successful in venture capital, or successful in what they, you know, I use the word speculate, in buying into businesses. All they do, to their simplified explanation to me, is they identify as many opportunities that fit their criteria, their model, at different, you know, maybe different sectors, and they seed these with, you know, large sums of money. And they realize that the vast majority of what they've done won't work out. And that's for not only them, but their competition. And you're getting down to where if you take 100 shots investing in these startups or different companies or ideas, they get down to where 10 of them are what pan out, and one or two of them are where they get their greatest return. So I can't speak to the SF model. I have no knowledge of how they came about doing what they're doing, but that is what it looks like to me. They identify the best prospects. They buy a lot of them. They have a program that works for them. And in general, when we have those conversations with, you know, I have individual clients that they don't particularly want partners. And this partner thing is a trend. It's trended here now. It's probably reaching a zenith, and then, you know, trends will change. But, you know, owners have always gone in and bought a couple together. I mean, look at Coolmore. They're a super partnership between Magner, Tabor, and I'm drawing a blank on the other gentleman's name that's in there, Smith. You know, they're a partnership. They do their thing. So to answer your question, I don't know that the justification of it is, you know, we're going to buy all these million-dollar horses and they're all going to pan out. History shows the best of us are around 20%, training, buying, riders, you know, things like that. So they know going in that 80% of the horses they're buying with their model and their focus, whether it's the model and focus of horses we like or that the SF group likes or that the Viola Rapoli group likes, or, you know, I think Winchell does some stuff with different people through his Asmussen contacts. Whatever it is, we're all buying and trying to get these athletes in our, you know, like a draft, you know, what we're thinking we want to train and have in there with residual value as the ultimate goal, whether it's a broodmare or in most of these instances we're talking stallions. And, you know, it's just the facts of the game that a lot of these horses are all afflicted by the same issue. They're slow. And you have, you know, a group that are faster than the others. Now, I'll tell you a quick story, and I'll try to make it to illustrate my point. I had a client of mine in the pharmaceutical industry, and in not in a legal sense. He said, David, is there some issue, a health-related issue that we could treat? You know, is it colic? Is it whatever? I said, yeah, 80% of the horses on the backside have this issue. And he gets out his notepad. He said, wait a minute, I will write this down. We could start doing research, and I was okay. And it was a serious conversation, and the guy probably wanted to smack me afterward. I said, okay. I said, are you ready? Yep. And he said, now this ailment, you think it's in, you know, Asmussen's barn and Sheriff's barn and Sadler's barn and Sugar McGahee's barn? I said, I'm positive it's in everybody's barn. The horses are affected by this, about 80% of them. He said, okay, what is it? I said, they're slow. I actually used a different F word, slow. And the guy looked at me, he goes, oh, you wise ass. I said, well, you know, that's the biggest problem. And all of us that buy horses, that train horses, that breed horses, you know, we all have, a formula is the wrong word, but we have a philosophy is a good word, of what we think works and what works for the people we deal with and the program. And, you know, I talked about vertical integration. I'm so lucky to have all the people that assist in what we do from the Lane's End and different farms we deal with to the training centers, to the trainers, to the jockeys. We have the best chain, I feel like, in the business and to get these results. But each of those links in the chain are tailored to the program, but none of us can help it if one is slow or one is unlucky, it's unsound. You know, there's tons of horses out there that have talent and don't make it. I soundly believe, like a Zenyatta, that horse, she is just a 60 grand horse if she doesn't go in the program and go to John Sheriff's, you know, because of various things. You know, Flightline, the way John's managed him has been phenomenal. There's a lot of horses, you know, we could talk about, but if they don't have the ability and they can't stay sound, they are in that 80%, and they're you know, slow is the biggest problem. So, you know, but to answer back to your question and tie this all in, we go out there, and I speak for our team, but I think it's the same with others. You're going out there identifying the horses you like. You pay what you think they're worth, and these people clearly are used to paying for things that they want that cost a lot of money. I mean, you know, guys buy boats and yachts and planes and house in the Hamptons I'd have no interest in, but they spend tens of millions of dollars. The people we deal with choose to do it in this business, and it gives them enjoyment. And, you know, I think majority of them understand what they're getting into. And that's it. Does that answer the question, do you think?
It does. I mean, I suppose the corollary is it is – And I thought you were uniquely qualified to broach this, because you operate in various directions. You know, the flow of bloodstock has this is this a positive for the game, for the trade? Is it a negative, or is it neutral? Would these horses that are selling for, you know, the top of the market? I mean, one thing that did happen over the last 18 months, pandemic or no pandemic, is that the middle market has firmed up considerably. I mean, that for an extended period, we had this. You know, we had this situation where the best horses were selling for top dollar. Well, the last couple of years, suddenly, you know, the middle market has firmed up considerably as well. And, you know, all kinds of horses are, you know, basically fetching good prices. But is that a trickle down? I mean, how do you think this trend has impacted the trade?
So, you know, we could talk about super, and I don't use the word super always in a positive sense, but you have, you know, our industry is affected by a lot of people having more, you know, horses or owners or whatever it is. And, you know, I don't begrudge anybody from putting something together like SF has done. I think it's was a good idea. It's paid off for them. It works for them. You know, what West Point and Lane's End has kind of done is not as formal a partnership as what the SF seems to be. And again, I'm not an insider, so I'm saying it's my observation. We've done it, to use your word, more organically. But I have somebody like Lee Searing. He sees this, and he has a strong intestinal fortitude, and he wants to do it, and he's got a desire. You know, he doesn't really need partners or want partners. He's trying to say, hey, I might take these guys on myself, and let's do it. You know, I've got a good trainer and a good program. You know, clearly Costas owns a lot of horses on his own.
Yeah.
So I don't see it as a negative. I guess to use your word is neutral. But, you know, if everybody broke off and did their own thing, would all these horses bring more money? I don't know, because something I found really interesting was that, to my knowledge, the you know, Mokhtoums and that family were not big participants in the United States yearling or two-year-old market in 2021. And I thought domestic demand and new players stepped up. You know, we're getting phone calls all the time from people that are interested, that have plenty of means. But, you know, it's a family thing. They don't want to have a bunch of people in the winner's circle they don't know. So I think you're going to see new players step up. I think demand for horses in my career, I feel, is the highest, and we have probably a supply issue of quality. So I don't think these groups have hurt. They haven't helped. You know, I think it always is good if there's more competition, whether it's in my sphere or in the auctions or whatever it is. Competition's a good thing. But I don't think it's hurt the business. I think it's motivated some people to join up and do their own versions of that. But this is not a new phenomenon. It's just more publicized now.
No, I appreciate it. I figure people would love to, you know, to see how you view it, because you bring up Lee, CRK, and that's encouraging. And it does seem every sale and every so often, you know, we can identify or see you know, new faces and people that, you know, that have been wading into it and then stepping up. That's great. I love hearing that.
I think, you know, I'm a great, again, reader of opinions and articles, and I wish our industry did a better job of talking about some of the positives out there. People do enjoy our sport, and they enjoy it enough to spend appreciable amounts of their disposable income on it, whatever that is. I mean, I read an article, Shug won a race for a guy that's 82 and wished he'd have started buying horses sooner. I think that's fantastic. And, you know, we have people that want to do it. You know, we have a lot of younger clients as well that are, you know, done quite well early in their careers or are quite liquid. And, you know, I think people want to race horses, and I think it's, I mean, gosh, the purse money is good. There's a lot of positives. We have negatives, and they shouldn't be glanced over. and we must fix them. But it's also, there's some positive too. And, you know, I'm if we can get some things straightened out, I think our industry, you know, it could have a brighter future than sometimes we write about.
David Ngordo's with us. We got a little under 10 minutes, and to shift away from Flightline and you know, some of the big top line stories, you mentioned family. We certainly have got to touch on a couple of family stories. I've known Cherie. It's going to be close to 20 years pretty soon. I guess it's about 15, 16. And she's had a steady progress and you know, turning horses into stakes runners. So congratulations to Cherie on a great season. And obviously, you know, more to come. And then there's Reagan and Reagan's decision. And what a great story this was, David, over the holidays.
Yeah, you know, we're proud is an understatement. And I've gotten plenty of people joking, well, we're just going to hire Reagan. And all I can tell them is I have a lifestyle I'm accustomed to. I hope Reagan's willing to contribute to that. So,
right.
You know, it's great. And, you know, again, this is a younger person. Clear, she's 10 years old. And, you know, I don't know that this is her passion yet, and I'm not forcing it on her, but she, you know, took it upon herself. And Cherie, who I couldn't thank enough for what she's done in mentoring Reagan and being a good influence on her and Cherie's sister. But since we all kind of look alike and Adrian is young, everybody thinks it's my daughter. So my other daughter, Adrian, have taken in helping Reagan out. And I mean, it's just great. I mean, really, I'm you know, a little bit speechless on it and very touched that it's all worked out that well. And, you know, Reagan, we talked about what happened in Western Kentucky with her. And, you know, she doesn't have a concept of money like we all do. But, you know, we talked about giving that prize money all to a donation to Western Kentucky. So, you know, we took the fees out and we've given about $25,000 to, we did it through Frank and Dino's, last night, and we gave $25,000 to Western Kentucky, and you know, encourage anybody that thinks that's a good idea to do it as well. But so Reagan got a lot out of this. She learned that if she works hard, good things can happen. She followed the process, and then she did something good with her money, and I couldn't be more proud of her.
Well, and she picked out this 3-year-old, and picked her out as a weanling, right?
Yeah, so she's having a bad day one day, and she was being a little bit bratty, and I want this heart, and Cherie said, no, if you want to do it, you have to go with your dad, and you have to do the work. We're not going to just sit here and, you know, willy-nilly do something. You need to go do the work. So it was cold as cold could be, but the next morning, it was a Saturday, I think, she got up. We went and looked through a lot of horses. And Reagan's pretty good. She's brand specific. Well, I'd like to buy one from Lane's End. Okay, Reagan, we can do that. And then I like Candy Ride, so we don't have a big enough budget for Candy Ride, but let's find something with Candy Ride and a pedigree. So she goes, okay. And, you know, we looked through a bunch, and I gave her a budget, and, you know, we got outbid on a few, and this was the one we kind of liked. So I did let her practice a little bit. I told the auctioneers, listen, she's going to bid $35,000. I know this one's going to bring $50,000, you know. So she got some practice, and we got this one, and she signed a ticket. And, you know, it was really, you know, like I say, it's a special, very, very special for me. And, you know, I've had some challenges with stuff to do with Reagan's other side of the family. So this has been, you know, good for me and good for her. And like I said, I can't thank Cherie and her sister, Adrian, enough what they've meant to Reagan and done for her. And it's such, you see the confidence in somebody young. And she's got a decent eye. I mean, I know I'm, you know, proud papa and all, but she's starting to notice things. And I'm even like, did she just say that? And Cherie's like, yeah. And she's right, you know, so You know, what her future holds is going to be up to her, but I'm very proud of her anyway.
Nice job to unified Philly. Reagan's decision wins first asking at 18-1 and looking at a fairgrounds allowance next. David, we got about 3 minutes, and I'm not going to let you go without bringing up something that kind of touches on for me, because we've got the two mayors with Larrae Visaggi at Rock Ridge and making some decisions. They're both due in the end of March, beginning of April, and one of the ones we're looking at is Cormorant, what the hell's wrong with me, Combatant, and who I loved as a racehorse, and Combatant standing at Rock Ridge, and I didn't realize you would put the deal together.
Yeah, we bought him out of the Keeneland Horses and Training Sale back a few Novembers ago. And, you know, he's one of those horses we thought had some improvement in him. If we changed venues, he was with Steve Asmussen, who did a great job with him. And the horse ended up, you know, going out to California and win the Sandia Handicap. And, you know, had a hard-knocking career out there.
Yeah.
You know, really, for the New York program, he's just a notch below maybe where we could have stood in Kentucky, but I think for the New York program, he's phenomenal. He's got a beautiful pedigree. He's A-plus physical. You know, Scat Daddy, I think, will be a sire of sires. And this horse had, you know, real ability. He was very sound. And, I mean, it won't surprise me if he does a city zip and ends up back in Kentucky once his first crops get to the races.
Combatant, and I'm sure as we get closer to the opening of the barns, and as the season gets started, I'm sure we'll have Larrae visit and talk about Combatant and what else is going on at Rock Ridge. They do a great job. David, this was so much fun, and I wanted to have sort of a bookend pair of conversations when it came to Flightline. So absolutely perfect. Congratulations on all the assorted successes, and let's all make it a great new year.
Thank you very much, and appreciate everything. Love your show, and keep up the good work.
I appreciate it. David and Gordo, everybody, you know, when you talk about, you know, the top of the market when it comes to bloodstock, and if you want in, David can really set you up in any arena, whatever side of the business intrigues you, and D and Gordo on Twitter as well. We got to pull up and send you out into the race day, and a very limited set of options today. It's a quiet Monday as the first week officially gets going. You've got fairgrounds, though. You got some fairgrounds action today, as well as Mahoning Valley and Philly and Parks. There'll be countless Eagle fans thronging the track, still celebrating everything falling into place for the Birds last night with Green Bay winning and earlier the Niners. All the dominoes fell. Turf Paradise runs today as well. So you got four options. Good luck if you're playing. Thanks to David and Gordo. Rich Migliori with a terrific hour together, and John Sadler as we wade into the year. Back tomorrow, we'll spend a lot of time on HISA with Alan Foreman and Chuck Simon, Sid, and more. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.